We've been talking all things German, all things Spanish this week. And just after the Champions League semi-finals, we're now bouncing straight off to Italy, and we're joined by a man who can make purple look hard and intimidating. It must be the Scottish accent. It's, of course, Giancarlo Rinaldi, Fiorentina's favourite fan, joining us here on World Football Daily. Giancarlo, how are you doing today, mate?
I'm good. It's always good fun to speak to you.
It's always a pleasure to have you on board. It's peculiar at this stage in the season not really having an Italian presence in the European spectrum, especially on a week when we're talking about Champions League semi-finals and Europa League semi-finals. What's it like from an Italian point of view watching this?
Well, it is. It's a very sort of voyeuristic experience, really. You know, you're kind of clutching at straws to try to get any link with the teams that matter this season. You know, Italian football is certainly not done well, and you know, we're looking at maybe Mourinho as a man who once managed in Italy, or you know, we're really clutching at straws. I noticed today there was one story which was sort of forlornly about the links between Lewandowski and the Italian teams 2 or 3 years ago, that you know, they could have signed him. I think it was Genoa they were saying had they actually denied that they'd done a deal for him about 3 years ago. So you know, there's a certain kind of looking in through the sweet shop window feel to Italian football at the moment, you know, and thinking of what might have been if we'd been able to afford, or if we'd been sort of long-sighted enough to spot some of these players early. But I think it's a fact that there's not the same money in Italian football now, and so you know, the kind of over a period of years now, the best players, or the big name players have been leaving Italy, and there's not been that many coming in. There are still, I think, some exciting young players there, and you know, they still managed to plunder a few markets and find good up and coming players. But the days when they were going round and spending tens of millions of pounds to bring in the very best are long gone, and you know, this is the end result. The teams don't make it very far in the big competitions, unfortunately.
Is there any chat about what could have been for maybe Juventus if they hadn't faced Bayern, if it had been anybody else in that quarter final, if it had been a Dortmund or a Madrid or someone? Is there that sort of speculation going about as well?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe amongst diehard Juventini, I suppose, and you know, undoubtedly the draw was unkind. But I do think there's a bit of a reality check there. The nature of the defeat, although you know, we've seen now Barcelona take an even heavier beating there. But you know, I think there was a recognition from Antonio Conte after those games that Juve are still a bit short of the mark of the very best in Europe, and you know, but having said that, they are one of the few teams in Italy that looks like they're going to go out and reinforce themselves during the summer, and you know, I think they'll be back with a renewed effort. They're, you know, the Juventus stadium's made a difference with another important income stream coming on board, so you know, they're maybe the one team in Italy that is in a position to try to compete with the very best. But I think, you know, as I say, I couldn't speak for out and out Juventus fans, and you know, the draw could have been kinder, but I think there was a sort of acceptance generally that, you know, there are maybe 6 or 7 teams that just have the clout and have been, you know, competing at that level for a long time now. I mean, although Juve's got a great pedigree going back down the years, you can't forget that, you know, they came back up out of Serie B only a few years ago, won their first title in a while last year, and you know, this whole experience has been a new thing. I think Conte called it a beautiful dream or something, and you know, that's really what it is. But their bread and butter has been Serie A, which they're going to have that pretty much sewn up probably at the weekend or the weekend after that, you know. So I think there's regrets, obviously, because, you know, the draw might have been more favourable. And then, you know, as with all these games, anything can happen. But I think, in general, right across Italian football, there's a recognition that they're a bit short of the very top mark at the moment.
And you mentioned that quality that perhaps needs to come back into Serie A, the big name players and maybe some big money moves. And there's talk in a lot of the papers, both in France and Italy, about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Juventus's interest in bringing him back to Turin. And talk as well of Conte saying that he wants to bring in a big player. They're already bringing in Llorente. Do you see this Ibrahimovic move happening as well, though, this summer?
I do struggle to understand it. I mean, in the end, you know, he's still a top quality player, and you know, there's no doubt he would make a difference. And that has been an area really where Juventus have struggled. I mean, I think you look at the front line that they've got, and they're all a bit hit and miss. They sometimes have their good games, they have their bad games. You've got, you know, Vucinic perhaps the most impressive of them, but then you go through your Matri, Quagliarella, Jovinkos. These are boys that all do a great job in Serie A, but you know, I think it was Jurgen Kohler before the clash with Bayern said these are good league strikers, but they're not great European strikers. So, you know, to get Llorente, I suppose, and to have, you know, if they did manage to team up Ibrahimovic, then, you know, it'd certainly be a big step forward in recognised European quality. But whether the club would want to make a backwards move again, and, you know, I'm very dubious. I think the number of times you can name a player or a manager return panning out well are few and far between, and in general they don't recreate the glories of their previous time. And I think most Juventini as well would probably rather move on and go out and get somebody on their way up rather than go back to a man that they've already seen some of the best of.
There's so many stories in and around Italy at the moment off the pitch in terms of potential managerial moves as well. There's one that's being talked about again in France and in England, and that's involving Cavani's future at Napoli. If a team actually pays out the £60 million asking price, are Napoli laughing all the way to the bank here?
Well, I mean, I don't think they would be laughing all the way to the bank, because he's been a tremendous player for them, and, you know, they love their football in Naples. To lose a player like that, who's, you know, not as revered as Maradona was, but, you know, he's certainly clambering up the steps towards that kind of level. You know, I don't think they would, certainly, you know, around the club, the supporters wouldn't be happy to lose a top player. But equally, you know, I think there's a sort of a reality, a dose of reality. Everybody knows if you got that kind of offer from a big money club, then it would be awfully hard to resist, you know, because you can go out and buy a lot of player with that kind of money. I saw that after the kind of rumours surfaced, there was a sort of swift denial from Paris Saint-Germain, perhaps because they're also supposed to be on the trail of Falcao, I think. So, you know, maybe they're playing that down a bit. But then the follow-up was a suggestion that Real Madrid might be able to cobble together a deal to get Cavani, and I think, you know, that involved Benzema going the other way and some sort of installments of cash to reach the £60 million mark. And, you know, that might be a deal that would be more acceptable in a way to Napoli fans, because they would be getting a recognised goal scorer going the other way and a good slice of cash. But, you know, obviously, from my point of view, I'd prefer it if they kept him, or if we kept him in Serie A, because we, you know, the stars are all going in the wrong direction at the moment, and it'd be nice to keep a hold of one or two.
With the stars leaving, there's room for homegrown talent, and a manager that's having to use a lot of youth talent at the moment is Stramaccioni at Inter Milan, with this just horrible injury crisis that they've got. Are people talking about his job being on the rocks? Do you see it as he's in a very dangerous position right now, when, in fairness to him, there's not much of this is really his fault?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, I don't know, the last stories I've read seem to be a kind of confirmation of some sort of faith in Stramaccioni. He's a young manager. He has had a lot to deal with it, and, you know, the Inter job, it's a big job to be thrown into so early in your managerial career. He has had ups and downs. You know, they certainly initially made a great impact, and then slowly but surely things have fallen apart a bit and got a lot more difficult. But, you know, I don't know that there's, again, money. I don't know that there's a lot of money in the pot to bring in anyone who would make a huge difference to Inter. I saw, I think today they've confirmed the signing of Mauro Icardi from Sampdoria and various other players as well. You know, so they are trying to pep up the team a bit for the future. I think you had kind of the remnants of Jose Mourinho's team there limping on, and unfortunately they used to try to bring in some new players. Mauro Icardi coming in from Samp to rejuvenate the side a bit. Hopefully that does the trick, but anybody taking the Inter job has got a hard task to meet the expectations of fans that, you know, they got the treble with Mourinho. It's going to be a difficult job. There have been certainly, you know, one of the most outrageous whispers, I think, was Deneck Zeman to get the Inter job, and there were a lot of fans of other teams rubbing their hands together in glee at the thought of that happening. And it would certainly, I don't think the Derby d'Italia would be the most interesting game in Italy if that deal ever went through. But I mean, I'd be surprised that they would throw the dice like that. I think, you know, in a way, to have a bit of faith in an up and coming young manager would be a refreshing approach for an Italian team to take. And you know, it can pay dividends if you show a bit of patience.
And you would know about that, I guess, being a Fiorentina fan, Giancarlo. I mean, there's plenty left to play for Fiorentina, and Champions League spot is almost within their grasp with Milan struggling without Balotelli.
Yeah, I mean, that's been, you know, Milan have had a tough run of games, and that's, you know, they've been really, the revival's been incredible from where they sank to at the start of the season. Balotelli played a huge part in that, but they did have this sort of back-to-back of three tricky games, I suppose, with Fiorentina, with Juve and the likes. And so, you know, they've come through that. It's dented their place in third spot, but they still have a 1 point advantage, and you know, now it's kind of, it does look head to head with Fiorentina for that last Champions League place. They've got very similar run-ins now. You would probably expect, you know, the momentum was certainly up until a couple of weeks ago was definitely in Milan's favour. You would expect now Balotelli's ban reduced by a game, you would think that they're going to start accelerating again now that they've come through that tricky run of games. But certainly, you know, it's been immense fun watching Fiorentina this season. Sometimes it's been painful. The weekend was a case in point where they managed to throw away a 3-0 lead. And, you know, if you tried to speak to me at that point or in the aftermath of that game, I might have been struggling to speak, because I was certainly put me through an emotional ringer then. But they do play some nice football, very attractive football. You know, as I say, sometimes it's a bit sloppy defensively, but they're very good to watch, and it's been a much more fun season than the last couple of seasons. Whether they're good enough to get into the Champions League, whether they're ready for the Champions League, that's a different prospect. And of course, the third Italian team doesn't get an automatic group game. It's, you know, it's into the qualifiers, and that, you know, we've seen in the past with Udinese that can be a bit of a poison chalice. Really, you can get a really tough draw and be straight out of the Champions League and down before you know it. You know, so whether this team is quite ready for Champions League football compared with, you know, Milan, who, you know, that's really their bread and butter. They're used to that for years to come. It would be lovely, I don't deny. I would love for Fiorentina to sneak past Milan, but you know, whether it would be in the best interest of the team going forward, maybe a season of Europa League just to get used to European football again might be a better option.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Fiorentina taking that Champions League spot either, I have to say, Giancarlo. I think I'd rather see AC Milan pip that, but that might be personal preference. You mentioned the game last weekend for Fiorentina against Torino, and obviously throwing that three-goal lead and getting the late winner, would that make it into your next book? Because you've just released your first kind of online Kindle book, The 20 Best Games in Serie A. Tell us a little bit about that and the kind of the thoughts about how you picked out these matches.
Well, it was a good fun project. I've been writing sort of historic match reports, mostly of games that I've seen myself for quite some time, for a couple of years anyway, maybe more, for a variety of websites and on my own blog as well. And over time, I thought, you know, I've stockpiled these. It would be nice to kind of package them up a bit and polish them properly and see if there's any sort of market for them as an ebook. So, you know, that was really it. And kind of the impetus behind it was really that every week, according to what fixtures were coming up in Italy, I would look back through the archives and dig deep into the old feeling memory and see if I could remember corresponding fixtures from previous years that, you know, brought back a lot of nice memories and were exciting games. So, you know, it's called 20 Great Italian Games. I hasten to add, it's not the 20 greatest Italian games, because there are some that aren't in there that probably should have been if that was the case. But I think they're all very memorable matches for different reasons. Some for personal preference. You know, there's a few. Some would say there's maybe too many Fiorentina games in there. But I take the old approach of the Scottish school playground, that it's my ball and I can decide the rules. And so they're stuffed full of Fiorentina. But I think there's stuff in there for fans of certainly of all the big teams, Milan, Juve, Inter, Roma, Lazio, you know, they all get a mention. And I was lucky in that, you know, I really started watching and writing about Italian football at what was a golden age. You know, they were doing what German football has been doing in recent times. These were times when Milan were going and beat Barcelona 4-0, when even small teams like Bologna, Genoa were having great European runs. You know, so I think I didn't realise it at the time, but, you know, it was a very fortunate time to be kind of getting a grounding in Italian football. And hopefully that's what's captured in the book. And it certainly, you know, it seems to have got a good response from people. It's been riding high in the bestsellers chart on soccer in the States and football bestsellers over in Europe. So it's I think people do have a certain nostalgia for a time when Italian football ruled the waves.
What made that time so great? Was it the parity, as you mentioned there, in the league, the fact that you still had, you know, smaller clubs that were able to battle it out with the big boys? Was it the fact that it wasn't TV scheduling dictating when the games were on and most of the games were played at the same time on a weekend? What was it that just made that early 90s to late 90s period just so fantastic for Italian football?
I think there was a magic about the players that were coming to Italy. You know, there was a lot of money, obviously, in Italian football, and it was 1980 was a sort of watershed time, because prior to that, there was a ban on signing foreign players in Serie A. That was really down to the belief that, you know, too many foreign players meant the national team was struggling. And I mean, it did pay off with the 82 World Cup win, but in 1980, they brought down the barriers and Serie A sides could have one foreigner, then two, and then three, and then finally the barriers came down completely. And I think, you know, I think the nostalgics amongst us look back to that sort of three foreigner rule and think that was about the right balance, because it didn't mean, you know, I think teams took more time over what foreigners they signed and they put more thought. There were still the odd bidone, as they call them in Italy, the dustbins that you know, that weren't worth the transfer fee. But I think at that point they did, and so you got Milan with the three Dutchmen, you got Inter responding with their three German players. You know, they just it was a time where the money was much greater. Threw in some great stars. You had some of the best managers operating, and Italian football was going through, you know, a bit of a tactical revolution at that time, thanks largely to the likes of Arrigo Sacchi and Zdenek Zeman. You know, were really dragging Italian football out of this defensive reputation into being much more in the UK. it certainly benefited from the fact that, you know, Channel 4 took the rights and were showing games live on a Sunday. And as you say, you know, they were all on at the same time, by and large. And, you know, that did make a difference as well, because you felt you got, you know, it was all packed into that kind of 2 hour period, and you got all the intensity of the action focused at that point. You know, so a whole lot of factors went into it, and but it certainly was, looking back, a pretty special time to follow Italian football.
Giancarlo, where can the listeners then, if they want to delve into your Italian footballing history, where can they pick up the book?
Yeah, the book's available via Amazon and Amazon.com or Amazon.co.uk. And if you just search for 20 Great Italian Games or search with my name, then that'll bring it up. And you know, it's very reasonably priced as well. And hopefully it gives a little bit of nostalgia for how Italian football used to be.
It makes us hark back to those glory days, that's for sure. And Giancarlo, thank you so much for joining us today on the show, having a look at Italian football, getting the Champions League perspective on everything, and of course, giving us an opportunity to have a look at this great read. I'm thoroughly enjoying it this week, I have to say.
Good stuff. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Giancarlo Rinaldi joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football. Plenty to talk off the pitch and Stramaccioni's future at Inter Milan. He got the win against Parma last week, but there are still plenty of question marks over it. You would have thought, though, with the scheme that Inter are wanting to put off the pitch in terms of bringing young players through, a man who's worked with their youth system would be the ideal man to build that in to the main squad. There's plenty left to fight for this weekend in Italian football. Juventus, of course, 11 points ahead in the Serie A table. Napoli, though, pulling away from AC Milan, who are just a point now ahead of Fiorentina. Milan in third place, Fiorentina in fourth, looking for that Champions League spot. And Inter have dragged themselves up thanks to Roma's stumble. And Lazio now are starting to look like the ones that could be missing out on Europa League through the league. But of course, Roma and Lazio could be battling out then. The Rome derby in the Coppa Italia final could be for somebody's place in Europe next season. Well, it definitely will be, but it could be their only chance, either side's only chance, to get into Europe next year. And I have to say, I mean, we don't generally hold bias. Like, we'll always help out anybody that comes on the show, and we love promoting Giancarlo and everybody else's stuff. And but this has actually been a really nice, like, kind of coffee table pickup. You pick up your Kindle and just have, because they're just nice short match reports, match reviews. You get the history behind them as well, though, and the build up to the game with it. And it's just a few pages. You can just rifle through a couple of games, and it takes you just back on those trips, kind of down memory lane to a time when it wasn't all about television money, and it wasn't about the kind of foreign influx of players, and it wasn't as much about kind of how the Italian football scandals had affected the game. It was still, you know, it was still kind of Hullet, Van Basten, Rijkaard, Platt, Gascoigne, Vinter, Casiraghi, Beppe Signore. And that was a golden time of Italian football. Hopefully that'll be coming round again. But the Italians out of all European competitions. We had the Champions League.